Well, good morning with you. In just a minute, I'm going to take you into the classroom of my Old Testament survey class at Berean Baptist Academy. But I want to share with you the notes that I gave them the day before so that the lecture in the classroom makes sense to you. What's in a Name is the title of the handout, and the handout comes from the ESV Study Bible. In Exodus chapter number 3, Moses asks God, the voice speaking to him from a bush, "What is your name?" And so the note says, given the polytheism and pantheism of the surrounding Egyptian culture, so that's what we're dealing with here, the surrounding Egyptian culture, it was essential to know the identity of the one true God, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Furthermore, in ancient cultures, to know the name of someone was to know something very essential about that person. Though Moses is apparently not familiar with God's name, this does not mean that the personal name of God was unknown to the Hebrews prior to Moses. Genesis 4:26, Genesis 9:26, Genesis 12:8, Genesis 26:25, Genesis 28:16, Genesis 30:27, and now Exodus 3:15. It may have meant that the name had been lost or had fallen in disuse during the centuries of slavery in Egypt, or that the name had not been used extensively or fully understood before this time. So now we want to talk about this phrase, "I am who I am," or "I am that I am," depending upon whether you're looking at the King James or a modern translation. In response to Moses' question, "What is your name?" in verse 13, God reveals his name to be Yahweh, corresponding to the four Hebrew consonants YHWH. And I should note that everyone doesn't agree with the pronunciation Yahweh. Jehovah is also an alternative that is favored by some. You'll find that a Blue Letter Bible. You'll find it in the New King James. The three occurrences of "I am" in verse 14 all represent forms of the Hebrew verb that means to be, and in each case are related to the divine name Yahweh or Jehovah, i.e. the Lord, and then we'll have a note that we want to share with you on that rendering the Lord. The divine name Yahweh has suggested to scholars a range of likely nuances of meaning. One, that God is the self-existent and therefore not dependent on anything else for his own existence. Two, that God is the creator and sustainer of all that exists. Three, that God is immutable in his being and character and thus is not in the process of becoming something different from what he presently is. That is to say that he is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. The contrast there would be, I was a boy, I am a teenager, I will be a man. That is to say, he is changing. Whereas with God, I am what I am that I am who I am, would clearly imply a lack of changing. That God is eternal in his existence, while each of these points is true, the author of this note says the main focus in the passage is on God's promise to be with Moses and his people. You will recall, let me interject here, you will recall, perhaps, with your knowledge of the Old Testament, that the book of Genesis closes with Jacob and the 70, and Joseph and his wife and the two boys, Manasseh and Ephraim, all in Egypt. In Egypt in a good sense, in Egypt having been rescued from the famine and now existing on the good land that Pharaoh has provided. But yet the book of Exodus opens up with a new king, a king that did not know Joseph, and hundreds of years have transpired, and now the children of Israel are under bondage and being subjected to taskmasters, slavery, building cities, being used as servants and workers, and the king in existence is concerned that the growth of the people is overwhelming to the point that they could unite with the enemy and overthrow the Egyptians. He issues an edict that the firstborn males, and not just the firstborn males, the males will have to die, that the midwives need to take care of that. They don't. Moses' life is reserved in God's sovereignty. Moses grows up in Pharaoh's house. As an adult, he murders an Egyptian, flees for his life, finds Jethro, marries his daughter, becomes a shepherd, and now, in the end of this time of being a shepherd, sees a burning bush that is not consumed, goes to investigate that bush, the bush speaks to him, and Moses asks the question. And so God is now responding to the covenant promise that he made to Abraham, the promise of a name, descendants, a land, and blessing. And so the author of the note here says, while each of these points is true of God, the main focus in the passage is on the Lord's promise to be with Moses and his people. The word translated, I am, in English, can also be understood and translated as I will be. Given the context of Exodus 3:12, I will be with you. The name of Yahweh, the Lord, is also a clear reminder of God's promise to his people and of his help for them in fulfilling their calling. In each of these cases, the personal name of God, as revealed to Moses, expresses something essential about the attributes and the character of God. So now let's pause for a minute and talk about the word the Lord, L-O-R-D. In the ESV, it's rendered uppercase L and then a smaller uppercase O, a smaller uppercase R, and a smaller uppercase D. The author says, though modern translations keep Yahweh in English, though some modern translations keep Yahweh in English, an example of that would be the Holman Christian Standard Bible. The ESV follows the tradition of replacing Yahweh with the Lord with small capital letters. This practice goes back to the first Greek translation of the 3rd century BC, the Septuagint, which renders Yahweh by Kyrios, Lord, a usage that was also quoted extensively in the Greek New Testament. In this way, translating this term as the Lord also shows the link with the New Testament, which calls Christ Lord, thereby identifying with him with the God of the Old Testament. When Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am, John 8:58, using the Greek found in Exodus 3:14, the Pharisees showed their desire to stone him, that they understood Jesus is claiming to be the God who revealed himself to Moses. So we used these notes, I explained it to the students, I taught from John 8:58, then I gave them a quiz where they could answer some questions. And evidently, I didn't do a good job of explaining the connection between John 8:58 and Exodus 3:14. So for the next 14 minutes of this lecture, I'm going to explain it to the students one more time. And at this time, you're going to jump into the classroom with us at Berean Baptist Academy. One more time, look at what happened. Thank you very much, Jack. We're going to look one more time between John 8 and Exodus 3, based on how pitiful your answers were. Obviously, I did a terrible job communicating what was going on there, so let's try it one more time. Let's go to Exodus 3, please. And Exodus 3, Jake, if you would read around 13 or maybe 12 and get us down to 14.
Sure.
Nice and loud, please. Exodus 3.
But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, but I will be with you, and this shall be a sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What should I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you.
All right, so what's his name? What's his name?
I am.
I am. That's his name. I am. His name is what?
I am.
I am who I am. There's nothing more. I don't have another name. I am who I am. Maybe like if I said Sean.
What? Sean. Sean. That's it. There's nothing more. Sean. I am is the name. You got it? I am. What were the consonants? Y-H-W-H. What are the two possible pronunciations? There are two possible pronunciations.
Yahweh.
I told you yesterday scholars argue about which is correct.
Yahweh and Jehovah.
Yahweh and
Jehovah.
Two possible pronunciations. You will see Jehovah with a J, and you will see Jehovah with a Y. It is a Y, but it has a J sound. That's what creates the multiple spelling. What's that? Yes,
yes.
The consonants were on the quiz. The Y, H, W, H.
No.
So, let's review. In English, it reads, I am. I am. The who there is, I am who I am. In other words, it would be like, Y-H-W-H, who, Y-H-W-H. You understand what I mean by that? It's the name, the word who, or the King James says that, and then the name again. And then he turns around and he says it one more time. Look at verse 14 again. I'll get you in a moment, Kyrie. So just look at it. Verse 14, everyone. I am, see it? I am, and then one more time, I am. You see it three different times there in that one verse. I am, I am, I am. Three particular times. And then the explanation there, we went over yesterday. You'll have some translations that'll put the word Jehovah down. You'll have some translations that'll put the word Yahweh. And then what word do other translations use? No, we went over it in class yesterday. We read it from the sheet that I gave it to you. The word Lord. Very good. The word Lord. The word Lord. So, three options in translations. Let me give them to you one more time. The word Jehovah, the word Yahweh, and the word Lord. All referring to the same Hebrew word, which is the proper name of God. The proper name of God. And I told you that the reason scholars argue about how it's pronounced is because the Hebrew alphabet does not have what? Vowels. Doesn't have vowels. And thus creates the variance in how did they pronounce it. We don't have any digital recorders. We don't have any recordings of how did Moses say this. Or how did God say it and then Moses say it back. So that's God introducing himself to Moses when he was asked the question, what is your name? Okay, are you good? Okay, because that's almost distracting at this point. Let's go to John 8 now. John 8. John 8. And what verse was it where we have the reference to Abraham and the reference to I am? What verse was that? 58. So they're asking, the Pharisees are asking Jesus who you are and who are you from and where are you coming from. And they're trying to get him to commit to, is he a prophet? Is he a priest? Is he Messiah? Something, some way of identifying that. They accuse him of being of whom?
The devil.
They call him a demon. And he repudiates that unequivocally and says that my father is the father of the God of Abraham. Now, I want you to see verse 58. Jesus said unto them, truly, truly, I say unto you, before Abraham was, what?
I am.
Now, that's what I was looking for in the quiz. The phrase, I am. If you didn't include that, then you didn't get it. You didn't get the connection. The I am that I am from Exodus, I am, it could be who I am, or that I am is the same I am of John 8:58. He says, before Abraham, I am. Yes, Jake.
Can you read the black one? Black Sharpie?
No, I'll be all right. We only have 8 minutes. Yes, Kyrie.
So, saying I am who I am and then saying I am, is that the same thing or is there a difference?
No, there's no difference. I am who I am. Nothing more. I am is the I'm the self-existent one. I'm the sovereign one. I am the one present now, past, future. I'm unchanging. I am who I am. I don't change. You can't add to me. You can't take away from me. I am the Creator God. I am the one that's going to fulfill the promises. We don't know all that's involved in that. We're just trying to understand the depth of that phraseology there. Because it has the B word there, I am, like Jesus will say, I am the light, I am the truth, I am the way. All these are articulations of the depth of that word, I am. And we know that the Jews saw what he was doing based on their actions. What did they do when he said that? Right, and we said that yesterday in class. We said they picked up stones to kill him. Why? What crime did they accuse him of committing?
Blasphemy.
All right, what is blasphemy? It's not taking the Lord's name in vain.
Calling yourself God.
Yes, it's identifying yourself as God. Identifying yourself as God. How did he identify himself as God? He didn't say, I'm God.
He said, I am.
Right.
Yeah. And what did they make in their mind? What connection did they make? Right. They went all the way back to Exodus 3. They knew that's God's proper name. No one's allowed to use that. We don't use that. You don't call yourself that. In the handout I gave you yesterday, our New Testament is written in what?
Hebrew.
Our New Testament is written in what?
Greek.
Okay, Greek. And our Old Testament is written in what?
Hebrew.
So we said, how is there a connection? And what we saw the connection was in what document? What translation of the Bible? What translation of the Old Testament? All right, what is that called?
The Septuagint.
S-E-P-T-U-A-D-I-N-T. Is the what? The Greek translation of the what? Say it louder, please.
The Old Testament.
Of the Old Testament. And this Greek, is exactly the same. The Greek in Hebrews 3:14 and the Greek in John 58 is exactly the same. What does that mean? What does that imply?
They're trying to establish a...
What are they trying to establish, Kyrie?
A connection.
A connection. They want you to establish a connection. And what is that connection they want you to see?
That Jesus
is what?
God.
Jesus is what?
God.
His divinity. He's divine. What does that mean, Danny? When someone's divine, what does that mean? What? It's God. That which is divine is God. Deity is God. Jesus has humanity and Jesus has deity. Humanity and deity. Humanity is the flesh, the blood, the heart. The deity is God. That's the connection that I wanted you to see between those. All right, does anyone have any questions about explaining that? Anyone at all have any questions about that? The I am of John and the I am of Exodus chapter number 3. The I am doesn't stop with just I am in there. I'll give you all the descriptions. Write these down in your notes. It's pretty simple. The first one he gives us is John 6. I am the bread of life. I am the bread of life. That's in John 6. In John 8, he gives them, I am the light of the world. All right, let me go back. The first one was, I am the bread of life. That's John 6. The second one is, I am the light of the world. That's John 8. The third one, I am the door of the sheep.
Where's that from?
John 10. I am the good shepherd. I'll come back in a minute, Brandon. Number four is, I am the good shepherd.
Where's that from?
John 10. So number one was bread of life, John 6. Number two was light of the world, John 8. Number three was the door. I am the door of the sheep. In other words, they go through me. I'm the only one. I'm the only way. That's John 10. John 10, the fourth, is the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. Number five, resurrection and life. I am the resurrection and life. That's John 11. I am the resurrection and life. John 11 is the last one. Now we do John 14. I've asked Jacob to quote this several times. The way, the truth, and the life. The way, the truth, and life. The way, the truth, and life. That's John 14. And then number 7 is, I am the true vine. I am the true vine. So Jesus uses this over and over again. The I am, the I am, the I am, the I am phrases, to ensure that they know he's saying, I'm the one. I'm it. I'm the one sent from the Father.
Where's the last one, Sal?
The last one, Sal, is John 15. So John 6, John 8, John 10, John 10, John 11, John 14, John 15. These are the I am statements of the Gospel of John, all designed to communicate the deity of
Christ,
the deity of Christ, to make the absolute and unequivocal connection between the I am of Exodus 3 and the I am of the Gospel of John. That they are the same. They are the same. They are the same in essence. They are both divine. They have the same origin, whatever that origin is, since it's God having neither beginning nor end. Mind-boggling concept. Those are the I am expressions. Anyone have any questions? Got them in your notes? All right, pack it up. Josh, bring it in a minute.